Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now for this last week of June. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and my guest this week is Scott Brenton. Scott is the executive director and co-founder of the Cedar Root Folk School. Scott is passionate about applying ecological lessons discovered in nature to areas of regenerative design, sustainable development, and agroecology. And he is a wonderful mentor and workshop leader to kids and adults in learning more and building the story of their environment and what is happening out there. I took a workshop from Scott this past spring and now want to share the concept of bird language with listeners of Nature Now. But first, let's hear this week's mystery sound. Actually, we are doing something a little different this week. The question is not what bird is making the sound, but what are the birds that are making the sounds all doing? We'll play sounds from five different common birds to our area. And the question is, what are they all communicating? So if you can identify any of those five different birds, that's entirely extra credit. The challenge is to determine what are they saying to the others. Well, it is the end of June, and summer is in full speed. Observations and news from folks out there. Charlie, what do we hear?
Wendy Feltham has been enjoying exploring the low tides at North Beach. One of her fun sightings has been the oval-anchored stalked jelly. Imagine a jellyfish 1/2 to 1 inch in diameter that has been turned upside down and placed on a stalk that is attached to a seaweed. That is a stalked jelly. Wendy also remarks that the dragonflies and damselflies are amazing these days. She found a bright red cardinal meadowhawk dragonfly in her garden, and recently a brilliant turquoise and black damselfly that was either a northern or boreal bluet.
That, of course, was Charlie Flashman, our multi-talented sound engineer. One of the things I notice are the purple, pink, and white foxgloves that are bursting forth on the Quipper Peninsula. Note that they are not native to North America, but were imported as garden flowers and now are fully domesticated here. The scientific name digitalis means finger-like and refers to the ease in which a flower of the foxglove can be fitted over a human fingertip. The term digitalis is also used for drug preparations extracted from the various foxglove plants for use in the care of cardiac conditions. Why foxglove? There are lots of theories. Some involve fairies, some involve old folk music, and so on. I suspect we'll never know why a foxglove is called a foxglove. Let's just enjoy the flowers.
In the orca world, this continues to be a summer filled with sightings of bigs or transient killer whales, while their southern residents remain noticeably absent. Sighting of the resident salmon-eating orcas has been spotty throughout the Salish Sea. Hopefully, wherever they are, they're finding salmon.
So, as I mentioned, I'm here today with Scott Brenton, and we're going to be talking about bird language. So, first, Scott, we need to know, what do you mean when you say the phrase bird language? And also, what's the difference when you talk about bird language or bird voices between that and sort of being able to identify the different species by their songs?
Okay, so bird language is listening to the birds for the nuanced messages on what their vocalizations, how that's broadcasting different movements through the forest. So whether there are predators in the area, aerial predators or ground-dwelling predators, the birds will set off a series of alarms that moves through the forest that you can pick up on just with a little dirt time and practice. So it's quite a bit different than learning individual vocalizations of birds. And I've found folks who have a really difficult time learning individual vocalizations.
I would be one of those, yeah.
Being able to pick up on bird language much easier because it's a series of patterns that replicate between any species of bird.
Well, it sort of sounds like the kind of core difference might be that identifying bird songs is about identifying an entity, like identifying a person, knowing its name. But it sounds like you're talking about that next step of communication, what the birds are saying to each other about what's going on in the habitat, sort of a level of awareness that's the next step beyond just knowing the name. Is that a way to think about
it? Yes, exactly. And you can simply break down the bird language into five different voices.
Do you want to do that for us?
Sure. So you have songs.
That's what we usually think of as identifying a bird by its song, right?
Correct. But then you also have where they are communicating, companions will communicate back and forth to each other. So it'll be a little more of a rhythmic back and forth that you can pick up on.
So companions, mates or members of a flock or?
Both. So whether it's a juvenile and a mom moving around feeding, but there'll be a back and forth communication that's essentially, where are you? I'm over here.
Oh.
Are you still there? Yeah, I'm over here.
What's the difference between the companion call and the songs?
So the song is more a inspiration in the morning time. You'll hear them belting out, whether that is, I'm not personally in the body of a bird.
Yeah, right.
But I can
really
only feel
intuit something. But yeah.
Yes, that it's a heralding of a new day. There's some territory stuff that happens with songs as well. And so you have that, and you have the companion call. Then you have in the springtime when there is territories being set up, there's a male-to-male aggression.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a juvenile begging call that comes after the chicks get born. Those are the voices that become the baseline in the forest. If you hear any of those, you know that there is not a Cooper's hawk around because they will not have any of those behaviors. They won't be rhythmically calling back and forth, where are you? I'm over here. It will be more run.
Run. And it's not feed me. It's not.
Right. It could be feed me, but those don't last very long.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I learned bird songs with great difficulty. How could I even think about learning these different kinds of communications?
The best way would be to relax and try and feel what that bird is saying. The agitation comes across so strongly. The where are you, I'm over here feeding, comes across so relaxed and mild. The song is just eloquent on top of a treetop. So if you can harness the feeling of those baseline rhythms first, then when there's a ch-ch-ch of approaching weasel, let's say as an example, it becomes very harsh in the middle of all of that relaxed baseline feeling in the forest.
So are the birds communicating with species other than their own?
Typically, they will listen to each other's vocalizations, mm-hmm. but they're more speaking within their family groups.
Okay. I was kind of thinking analogy sounds like listening to a foreign language being spoken by a human that you don't understand.
Uh-huh.
You can get some of the emotion just by listening to the delivery.
I would say the difference is everything living by their own senses and wits in the natural world to survive speak this language. So if a junco gives an alarm call, everything is listening, from a deer to a fox to the hawk that's about to eat that junco. All of them are able to speak that same language. They don't necessarily speak it, but they can understand
what the meaning is anyway.
Mm-hmm. And utilize it for their benefit. So the deer that hears the junco giving an alarm, even though it is from a jogger coming down one of the trails around here. That deer picks up on that junco's alarm call and starts slowly sneaking off away from that trail.
As its safety behavior.
Yeah. Yeah, which then also sets off secondary alarms off of that sneaking deer posture moving away. And so the cougar is able to pick up on that secondary alarm and use it for its own benefit. It's similar to if you think about a rock being dropped into a pond. And let's say the rock is a sharp-shinned hawk. A sharp-shinned hawk moving through a forest is setting off ripples out in front of it. Depending on how good that individual hawk is, the ripples are either brought way close to it in those concentric rings, or they're broadcast further out.
What about a human entering the woods? I mean, we must set off that kind of response, too.
Oh, we do. Yeah, and again, it depends on the individual. So an individual moving through the forest in a very relaxed state that is stopping often and letting their curiosity guide where they're going, as well as honoring these creatures who are giving the alarms, that's the way to move around the alarm calls, is by recognizing that it's happening and giving that bird space, and it will settle down.
Can you tell me maybe a story of an experience you have had that kind of gave you an appreciation of what was going on that you wouldn't have had if you'd not been tuned into this kind of awareness and perception?
I believe that the whole experience of learning and recognizing bird language drives you into a relationship with the natural world that you don't get by simply going for a hike. And I have nothing wrong with going for a hike or going for a bike ride, but it's pretty different than tuning into bird language actually allows you to participate with the natural world. And so when you move on a hike from mile marker 1 to mile marker 3, nothing else in the forest moves like that. And so the ripples that you're sending out are very large. The only thing larger is a house dog let off a leash. Because the behavior is so erratic compared to the rhythm and flow in nature, mm-hmm. that us with our agenda moving through a forest, nothing moves like that. And so the animals, as well as the birds, as well as the bird language, is all moving at great distances in front of the person who's moving like that.
So all that alarm communication must be just simply about survival and using as little energy as possible to survive.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
There's a book, and I know Scott knows this book, and I know he's actually studied with the author of the book. It's John Young, and the book is called What the Robin Knows, and there's a subtitle that I don't remember, but anyway, it's a What the Robin Knows. I was reading it a while back and came across a quote, and I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to ask Scott a question about it. And this is a quote that John Young includes in his book, and it's from a San Bushman. And the quote is, "If one day I see a bird and recognize it, a thin thread will form between me and that bird. If I just see it but don't really recognize it, there is no thin thread. If I go out tomorrow and see and really recognize that same individual small bird again, the thread will thicken and strengthen just a little. Every time I see and recognize that bird, the thread strengthens. Eventually, it will grow into a string, then a cord, and finally a rope. This is what it means to be a bushman. We make ropes with all aspects of the creation this way." Does that resonate with you in any way? I just think the quote's amazing.
No, I do
does
too.
That resonate?
I have to say that's, in a nutshell, the curriculum of all of our youth programs. That's what we are doing with youth when we bring them out in our forest programs, is stretching them into relationship with the world around them. We all know the statistics that kids aren't getting outside enough and that they're on their devices too much or inside. And the remedy for that is not simply just going outside. It's also having talented mentors that are allowing them to build those ropes with the world that they live in. The other thing that I think is really fascinating about that, if you read in there, it's not that they're recognizing a bird, like learning, say, spotted towhee.
Yeah.
They're recognizing an individual bird. And I think that as budding naturalists, we always assume it's about learning as many different species mm-hmm. as we can so that we could recognize, oh, there's a red-tailed hawk on the top of that tree, or that there is a plantain growing in my garden. Yet how that bird is an individual is creating a rope in a totally different way than just knowing that it's a red-tailed hawk. That red-tailed hawks land differently if they are experienced. You can watch an experienced individual hawk turning into the wind and landing just gracefully. And if you were in the Olympics, then that would be given a 10. And you can see juveniles land with 1 foot first and kind of flop over, and they're learning it. And so it's a whole different world when you start viewing creatures as individuals mm. rather than just species.
Well, does it take sort of especially keen senses to do this? I mean, it sounds like something I would love to do, but I sort of go, really? Wow. How do you do this?
It's innate in all of us. It is our human operating system 101 that we've evolved with this landscape much longer than we've evolved with iPad touches. And so if you have a hard time navigating an iPad touch, it is much easier to learn bird language than that.
So I want to review again, you talked about it when you started, the different, I mean, I'm sure these are ways humans categorize information so we can make sense of it, but the different kinds of bird voices, review that for us once more, because now I'm thinking about it kind of even in a different way than when you originally talked about it.
As a short introduction in 15 minutes on a radio, I would just simply break down for the listening audience that there is relaxed and agitated behavior. Because I think people get into the nuances of, well, is that a companion call or is that a song? And it really doesn't matter. It's more, those are nuances for further down the road. But if you can just simply recognize that there's relaxed behavior and there is alarmed behavior in the birds around us, then that reflects a ton back to us. Because are we going out of our front door and moving to the car and scattering birds and causing all these alarms because we forgot that we're even outside yet? We're already in our mind, in our agenda, going to the place that we need to get to.
So tell me, how did you learn this stuff?
Well, I was fortunate enough to spend a decade with John Young down in California. All truth be told, I really didn't believe in much of what he was showing me first off when I met him. And I remember a distinct walk on the Evergreen campus at the Evergreen State College, and when he came down to visit, when he pointed out the smell of red fox urine and he showed us some shrew tracks in the mud, and he told us there was an owl 100 yards away by what the birds were saying. I had a hard time swallowing all of those when I was 21, and I have to say 20 years later, I could recognize red fox urine or a shrew track or an owl at 100 yards, and it's all in how we pay attention to the patterns.
Let's end our conversation with me asking you, if someone wanted to become more aware, what do they do?
We should probably do another show on that. And I think that the recipe for what a sit spot is and how to adopt a patch of ground near where you live and some of the exercises, you can teach yourself bird language.
So there's a practice.
There's a
yes, let's do that.
Okay.
Come back again.
Okay.
All right, that's good. Thanks so much, Scott. This is opening a whole other arena of listening and seeing, and a valuable one at that. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that was an interesting conversation with Scott. Let's now return to the mystery sound. Charlie, can we hear those mystery sounds again? Remember, the question is, what are all these birds doing? Thank you. Well, given what we've been talking about with Scott Brinton, it should be of no surprise. Those five species that we just heard were all sending alarm calls. The first one was an American robin's peek and tut. Those alarms are often used when there is a threat near the nest. The second call was a dark-eyed juncle's tss, 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 and it's a subtle, quiet alarm call. The common yellowthroat gave the third call, indicating that there was trouble nearby. We also heard the mew and chip of the spotted towhee, and then lastly, the squawk of the American crow. That recording, by the way, was made as a group of crows were mobbing a human being, making field recordings of bird vocalizations. All those calls certainly sound like the birds are using exclamation points. Let's look forward to what's coming up in the next few weeks. Charlie, will you help me share the natural history calendar?
Look up in the sky this week during the evening just as night is falling. In the southern sky, you can see half of the constellations of the zodiac. They stretch from Cancer, which is quite low in the west, to Leo, Virgo, Libra, Scorpius, and finally Sagittarius, low in the southeast.
The Jefferson Landrus Natural History Society book group met this past Monday to discuss Jack Nisbet's book, Ancient Places, People and Landscapes in the Emerging Northwest. The book for July is Leanda Lynn Haupt's The Urban Bestiary, Encountering the Everyday Wild. The book group is open to anyone who wants to come, and they will meet again on July 25th. See more details on the Jefferson Land Trust Natural History Society website.
On Friday, July 8th, join members of the Native Plant Society for an exploration of the fascinating plants, including some rare and endemic. Meet at the Quilcene Forest Service Visitor Center at 8:30 a.m. for this exploration of Mount Townsend. Check the Native Plant Society Olympic Peninsula Chapter website for details.
So, that's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information from the natural community where we live. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have comments, observations, or ideas, or even if you think you might be interested in joining our team of Nature Now hosts. Email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at noon on Wednesdays, with repeats here on KPTZ on Thursdays at 5 p.m. and Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Crows, performed by Allison Moorer.
What's the worst news he could bring? And I make a mess when I'm guessing.